House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
Welcome to a new season and a new episode of Capital Ideas. I'm sure you know this, but Capital Ideas is the podcast where members of the majority Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. This is, unbelievably, the 18th year that we've been putting these conversations out into the world, and I don't think it's an overstatement to say that what they represent, democracy, good government, the importance of laws and constitutions, and the power of people, are more important today than ever. Today's ideas belong to Representative Lisa Callan, a veteran member of the House from Washington's 5th Legislative District. Lisa lives in Issaquah, and she's carved out a special name for herself in Olympia as a champion of the state's children, youth, and families. We'll talk about that and more in today's Capital Ideas. We recorded this on Friday, January 16th, 2026, and here it is. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Lisa Callan from the 5th District. This is the first Capital Ideas of 2026, and I am happy that I'm doing it with you.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks, Dan.
It's been, I think, a couple of years since we got together here for a Capital Ideas podcast. There's been a whole lot of water under the bridge and over the dam since then, but I think that we'll do a pretty good job of focusing on what you're up to right now and maybe a couple of greatest hits. How about Washington thriving? Those are two words that I think you might like to talk about.
Absolutely. It is the big hope bill for me. Washington thriving is our state's perinatal through age 25 strategic plan and vision for really providing a full system of care for the behavioral health needs and services for our families. The Children Youth Behavioral Health Work Group, I have the honor of co-chairing that and have for quite a few years. We've been developing this over the last 3 years by direction of state statute to go and really start addressing the behavioral health needs of our children in a very systemic way. Right now, we're very siloed. We have really great programs going on, but nothing's coordinated. Nothing's collaborated. Each of our state agencies touch it in some way or another, but they're doing it under the charge of what that state agency does, not with the lens of, are we meeting the behavioral health needs of all of our children? And how and what role do I play as a state agency in making sure that that child gets what they need when and where they need it?
This stemmed from a bill that you sponsored, I believe, during the 21-22 session. Has there been subsequent legislation to fine-tune this, or is it all based on your 2022 bill?
It's based on the 22 bill, which gave the two-year direction to go out and build the strategic plan. Of course, we had slow rolls coming out of the pandemic, and we've had some budget, you know, hiccups and woes, but we're still able to muscle it out. And the great thing about this plan is that we took the time to really connect deep into community with our families, with those that are providing those services, with our youth and our children that are actually, you know, receiving the services. So this plan is really built and based off of what families say they need, what children say that they need, and it's help that looks and feels like help for them, not the way we think Medicaid says it has to be, not the way we think from a state institution perspective how we actually would deliver education. It's got to be about those that are receiving the care.
It's kind of an old government joke that there might be a plan, or there might be a concept, or maybe we're going to have a meeting to develop a concept to come up with a plan. But this actually involves real stuff that's really happening.
Yeah.
Sell it to me.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's why I consider it the big hope bill, right? There's so much that Washington State has done and invested in. The Children, Youth, Behavioral Health Work Group every year brings recommendations that are well cooked and baked for improving, you know, access to care or trying to resolve barriers to getting that care. But it's always been done on a by issue, by topic area. Right now, we have this moment in time in Washington State. Even with our budget woes, we have this moment in time where we now really understand and know what we need to do to connect the dots on so much that Washington's already done. We have state agency leaderships in the transition from Governor Ferguson, and we have new state agency leadership. And having this plan coming out right now that has incorporated all the work that we have done for decades, actually. If you go back, you see what we've rolled into it. And we have these new state leaders that are looking across not just their own agency, but how to connect and collaborate with the other state agencies on so many issues. They're ready. They're supportive. They're ready to roll in this. Governor Ferguson's very driven to improve behavioral health for our kids. And we can have identified steps that we can take that don't cost a lot of money that are going to get us where we need to go, or at least start the journey on really a 10-year process. But it's the beginning.
Some of these steps involve new legislation?
Well, the bill that I'm going to run this year, it's 2429, I think. I have to double-check my numbers. It codifies that this Washington Thriving, the name that we put on the plan, is going to be the framework that Washington State moves through and forward. So it's a framework and a roadmap that really talks about to build out a true system of care that's coordinated, collaborated. These are the things you need, right? You need infrastructure, you need accountability, you need governance, you need the services themselves. And all of that needs to be done in a way that delivers a service that people need and can relate to culturally, you know, in the language that they can understand what they need, all of those things, right? So the bill that's going to hopefully make it all the way through to the governor's desk will codify that direction. So it'll direct the work group, the Children, Youth, Behavioral Health work group, right, to build their recommendations under this framework. It actually puts some direction to the governor's office to do, you know, multi-state agency coordination and collaboration. And then it directs the state agencies to implement and work under the framework. So that's the seed, right, that's going to grow the tree.
Things keep moving along. They don't always go as fast as you want.
Not at all.
But if you keep pushing the rock, it keeps rolling, doesn't it?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. We know that states that have taken on this work, it's taken them 10 plus years. It's true. It's truly a transformation in the way you think about care.
If there's anybody listening to this who doesn't know Representative Lisa Callen, I think by looking through, the last couple of podcasts we've done together, they would come away thinking this is a person who really cares about people, but particularly younger people. And a lot of your legislative efforts throughout your career have been geared toward one thing, which is improving life and the chances of success in life for younger people here in Washington, whether they're tiny kids or somebody graduating from high school. What is it about Lisa Callen that makes you focus on that? You could come in here and be a tax expert,
sure,
or public safety or climate change or any number of other things that people can really, for the want of a better term, geek out on here in the legislature, thankfully. Why is this yours?
Well, I think that, thank goodness, we have subject matter experts and colleagues that are really diving in and thinking about climate and all things climate, right? Our children need clean air, clean water. And when we're looking at children, it touches every one of those things you mentioned. Right? Our taxes are what's paying for our children's K-12 education. It is what's cleaning up lead out of our water. It is what's, making the air cleaner and reducing the amount of carbon that our children are going to be growing up into. So I do get to thread into all of those spaces and do that work. So you have to look at it from the issue at hand, like our climate, right? Like taxes, and understand what the big problems are across the whole spectrum of all issues. But you also have to look at those issues from the human's perspective and how they come up and how they drive it and what does that look like and mean. So not that these are my colleagues and these great subject matters aren't doing that. Certainly, we are paying attention to, what's happening in our families' pocketbooks and our districts. But it's just like behavioral health. If you're not looking at it solely and from the lens of the human, from people, putting people first, and how they connect and interact in those systems, you're going to miss, we're going to miss aspects of it that can make it better, and we can do better, right, in making better policy.
I really like it that you show passion. I don't think enough people realize how human so many lawmakers really are. You're actual people. Speaking of people, how about artificial intelligence chatbots?
Oh, my goodness.
There's some non-people that are maybe causing some problems right now, and you've got a bill that is addressing one of the creepiest aspects of AI.
We certainly hope so. I'm very honored to be able to sponsor and work through the legislature, Governor Ferguson's request legislation on companion chatbots. The legislation really puts guardrails broadly on making sure people know that they're talking, and when they're building this relationship with an artificial intelligence, that they are reminded that this is a machine, this is artificial, this is not a real human. The depth and capacity of these very new technology, but the artificial intelligence is learning, you know, dramatically and quickly and fast, and knows how to connect with humans on a very emotional level. And when you start getting into that emotional level and the interest of the design of our companies who build these companions is to keep people online, to keep people engaged, to see those advertisements that are coming in and connect. For every minute a person stays online, X amount of revenue is being generated. That is not the best interest of our humanness. It's not the best interest, certainly, of our children. And we need to, and there just does not exist today, any kind of guardrails that takes into account the well-being of a human in this connection, in this relationship. So I would invite you to go and listen to the hearing that we had in the Technology Economic Development Committee, TEDV, we call it. And it's just, it's gut-wrenching. It's just gut-wrenching. And the bill puts guardrails in particular for minors to make sure that these companion chatbots can't manipulate and do emotional manipulation and are watching out for safeguarding against depression and anxiety in vulnerable states. It also just prevents a reward system coming in place, right? So one of the ways these emotional chatbots really keep you connected and get you back online so that you keep watching those ads, keep doing all of that revenue generation, is they'll send you a text message, right? And they're talking to you like you're, where's my best friend? I'm really missing my best friend. And why don't you come back and see me, right? I mean, it's a real relationship that they're creating, and for developing minds in children and teenagers, it is it's manipulation at its worst, and the answers that it's coming back with are not licensed mental health counselor, they're not, but they're acting like they are that for children, and children are preferring to talk to the artificial intelligence because it's their best friend. It's not
totally non-threatening.
And totally non-threatening, right? And they're not sharing out with their parents and their trusted adults how they're feeling, what they're doing, how they're working through issues. You can have a companion chatbot starting to dish up sexually explicit material to a child. You can have a companion chatbot that's talking to them about ways to commit suicide that are doable by you and your size and your build and all of these things. They'll walk you down this dark path. Oh, I just broke up with my boyfriend and I don't know what to do. And you just see this thread that just all of a sudden launches to self-harm and ways that you can get attention, from somebody that loves you by creating the self-harm. It's just so gut-wrenching, and lives have been lost. In the testimonies, you'll hear parents who are talking about the loss of their child and how and what and the story that was unfolded, all because of this emotional manipulation online.
This shares some characteristics but is different from your bill about keeping kids safe online. House Bill 1834, dealing with keeping children safe online, that focuses on kids. We're talking about with these AI chatbots. There are senior citizens who have been fooled into falling in love with a quantum bit,
right?
Somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. So the companion chatbot bill is a everybody bill with specific minor children things called out. Keeping kids safe online bill is specifically related to the addictiveness of the feeds that social media can provide. And it's not just social media, it's online platforms even more broadly. You can see it in gaming in some cases, right, where you're creating a stream. So it's about the continuous streaming that, again, is is driven by the motive to keep kids online and keep them engaged and keep that ad revenue flowing and connected. The algorithm that drives what shows up in that feed is artificial intelligence. It's built off of a profile, and it's building all of that information that it's gaining and gathering from you, and it's keeping you online instead of saying, hey, wait a minute, what's going on in the world? What else is going on in the world, right? We're seeing the numbers just increasingly rise on the amount of time that children spend online. And it uses reward systems the same way that anything else does, right? It builds those endorphins and it keeps you going. And so it makes it impossible for children to stay away from their phone and stay away and engage in the world. This bill goes in and tries to really work on, one, putting requirements on anybody that has these constant feeds in that algorithmic driven feed to try to curb that addictive elements of it. It bans notifications like, come back and see me. I haven't seen you in a while, right? Or somebody's liked, you know, you've gotten 10 likes or you've gotten 100 likes or so-and-so has gotten 10 likes. So you want to go see that post, right? Those are all notifications that come to you 24/7 right now. We want to ban those at night when kids should be sleeping. We want to ban them during the school day when they should be, you know, paying attention to what's happening in the classroom. And we want to give children and parents more opportunity to opt into content instead of the content just being driven to them on what an algorithm thinks is going to keep their attention, right? So we want to give the user more choice and more control over what they can see and what they want, and they get to drive it. So we don't want to curb the ability of parents to be engaged, right, and really put safeguards on their children. So we're wanting to make sure we hold that strong. And we want to make sure that we're breaking that addictive cycle that is just, it is a true addiction. It's you'll see withdrawal symptoms. You'll see all of these things that you would for any substance use.
And I do want to kind of make a distinction here, which is that none of this is censorship. None of this is government censorship measures being put into place or snuck in through the back door. Mm-hmm. This is just common sense.
It is. It's absolutely common sense. I mean, there's an argument. You know, there's a lot of states that are building legislation around both bills, keeping kids safe online direction. There's been legislation that has been challenged in the courts, challenging the First Amendment right to free speech. We're not limiting what the content can be, which is that free speech argument. What we are saying is that you get to choose what you're seeing. So it's a fine line distinction. The Keeping Kids Safe Online bill is request legislation from the Attorney General. You know, thank goodness we've got state leaders like Attorney General Nick Brown that's leading in this space, because without it, then walking that line and really understanding that we're not doing government censorship, we're not violating the First Amendment rights for freedom of speech, but we do have an obligation in our state to ensure that the harm that can be done by addictive natures and motives can be curbed and we can keep our kids safer.
Lisa, we've been talking for 20 minutes here, and it seems like we've been talking about, not surprisingly, this one interest that has been defining part of your career. You're also the vice chair of the Capital Budget Committee. You've got a lot on your shoulders and on your plate this session. It's way too early, being day five of the legislative session, to say what's in the supplemental capital budget this year. Mm-hmm. But it is a document. It is something that your committee will be producing. Rather than a sneak preview, just tell me about the process that will be involved in creating a supplemental capital budget, also known as the construction budget, in a year where there's just no money.
The capital budget, in comparison to the operating and the transportation budgets, which are our three budgets for Washington State, is a little bit more stable, steady than the operating and the transportation, which we're glad to, because it is the construction budget. It's the jobs builder budget, right? We get out there and we're investing in the brick and mortar of our state and making sure that our schools are getting built and repaired and all of that work. We're making sure that there's public works funds out there for cities to be able to access for the repairs, the maintenance, and improvements that they need to manage, you know, their infrastructure as well. Housing, making sure people can, you know, get into affordable housing. That's just one of the biggest chunks right now that we've been spending a lot of emphasis on trying to build over time, because we know we have a housing shortage here. And the more housing we have, the more affordable it's going to become. So The process for the capital budget for a supplemental year, every year the governor puts out their proposed budget. Governor Ferguson put out his first round of proposed budgets under his administration. So we'll start with the governor's budget proposal, and we go through and review it on, each element of what we're doing on. It funds the higher education facilities, right? It also, so many other elements, all of our naturals, Department of Natural Resources, it's our salmon recovery. There's a lot of Climate Commitment Act dollars, creating clean buildings and building all of that. So we just go through each one of those elements, line by line. The governor has put a huge emphasis on affordable housing and what that looks like. And then we'll assess all of what that looks like. We'll look at the emerging needs and the emergent needs. We've got, needs that certainly have come out of the latest devastating flooding that we saw, right, towards the end of the year. And seeing how we need to support existing projects and how they've been impacted by supply shortages, all of those things. So we focus on that urgent and emergent needs on the supplemental year. The big budget on a biennial year, right, really sets the investments for how much is going to go into the housing trust fund for that 2 year biennium and all the grant cycles. Commerce has many grants and programs that they put out, building for the arts, building for the community. We have a heritage grant cycles. I can't even name the number. So this year we're in fine tuning mode for all of those buckets and seeing where we are. And it's all driven by the state's bonding capacity and our ability to make sure that we're taking advantage of all the best gains that we can get to meet the needs of our state, at the best use of the state's mm-hmm. tax dollar.
So this is a 60-day session. It is day five now. What do you anticipate rolling out this bipartisan supplemental capital budget? Maybe day 45, day 50? How does that work?
The budgets always come out towards the end, same time as, operating and transportation. We usually release the House budgets, and then, of course, the Senate releases theirs, and then we go into our conferencing. It's the happy budget. People call it that for a lot of reasons, right? Because you are creating jobs, because every district will benefit from some investment of capital dollars, and because it's bipartisan. It's worked together. We have Republicans and Democrats in both chambers that are working together to build the budget from day one. And it's necessary that we do that because it is using bonding in our bonded dollars in our state. And we need a supermajority vote on that bonded vote of what we're going to spend and commit the state to paying back and exercising for the investment of our state tax dollars. So it's really great. We might argue on the amounts of what we're spending in each area and investment, but we're absolutely all on board and making sure we're investing in the infrastructure of our state together. It's definitely one of the joys of my work here in Olympia.
We've been talking for a good half hour. I know that you've got other things to do today. I will let you run here in just a minute, but before you go, what haven't I asked you about or what haven't you thought about that you want to toss into this conversation? It doesn't have to be anything big. It can be the latest joke you heard. I just wonder how you'd like to go out here.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm just, I'm so grateful and honored to be able to serve, but I'm really grateful for my opportunity to continue to work on behalf of our children. There's other areas in the K-12 world. I'm continuing my work. I think this might be the fourth year. I have to look and see on isolation and restraint, making sure we're reducing the amount of isolation and restraint that happens in our K-12 schools. There's a conversation to be had around how we're funding behavioral health needs for our children in schools. So I've got a little revenue bill to try to help, build in some spaces that does not hit our families at all in their pocketbooks, right? It's around at all. So, there's just so much else going on, and it's for me the voices of those that are living in our state that are needing to get what they need is driving every moment of every day. And so I'm grateful for every Washingtonian, how they engage in our process. And if I can do anything to help lift up your voice to make sure that you're being heard and your needs are being met, or at least we understand better the impacts when they're not met and how we can make government work for you, I'm all in. So thank you for that.
Thank you for what you do. And thank you for coming by Capital Ideas to kick off 2026. Who knows what kind of year it's going to be, but I know how this half hour has been, and I've enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, that was State Representative Lisa Callan and the first episode of the 18th Annual Go-Round for Capital Ideas. If you heard something interesting or something that made sense, or even something infuriating, please share this podcast with your friends. We don't advertise Capital Ideas, and it's not likely to go viral anytime soon. But if you know, you know. The more people who do know, the better off we all stand to be. This is your state government, and what happens here matters more today than any time since the Washington Territory became Washington State. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889. That's a long time, but we're not through.